show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. Six, five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said.
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well now, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Kind of a lazy, hazy day here in southwest Florida. I hope it's nice where you are today. Not too cold, not too snowy, rainy, whatever. We had a little rain yesterday, last evening, actually, and we can use it. It's dry as can be around here from Georgia on down, up the East Coast. Very, very dry. I've got water restrictions on and all that, so we're hoping for some rain. That'd be a good thing. How you doing? How'd your weekend go? Did you have a great weekend and all? Hope you did. I certainly did. Well, I worked all weekend, but other than that, had a lot of fun. And we've got lots to talk about today. A lot in the news, as always. Many, many different stories. We'll talk a little bit today about the media. Seems like we're always talking about that liberal media, you know. And, of course, the war and politics, politics, politics. Lots of politics today. We'll be talking about that. Hey, and Dick Cheney. My goodness, our vice president has had to have some sort of a defibrillating process done on his heart to get it going right again. Some would say, and some have suggested, that his heart probably has never beat like a normal human being, that his heart, well, that he's incapable of having a heart. A lot of people would say that. Did I say that? But a lot of people have said that about Darth Cheney, and seems like he's having some medical problems. Oh, well, he's had lots of them, and he'll make it through. He's too mean not to, that's for sure. I heard Rush Limbaugh saying yesterday, I did want to mention this. I don't tune into that show on a regular basis, but by accident, I'm heading down the road yesterday afternoon. I was briefly away from the studio, and I heard Rush Limbaugh say, "I've got a big brain, and I know how to use it, and I know that the, and I know now," he said, "and I know that the idea of humans being able to have an effect on the life of this planet is utterly ridiculous." Never mind science, Rush. We don't need to know about that old science that people have been talking about. I'm always fascinated how these right-wingers completely reject the notion of global warming and the problems with our environment. Just completely reject it out of hand. Odd, don't you think? I really do think it's extremely strange. Where else were we going? Oh, I did see this little note in the news yesterday to give you an idea of just how things are going right now. Cleveland, Ohio's first Walmart is about to open. Now, there's some big news. Cleveland's first Walmart, and it comes with 300 new jobs in a new area, in an area that's struggling economically. Yes, Cleveland is struggling mightily. The result, according to the Cleveland Plain Dealer, 6,000 people applied. That's 20 applicants for every job at a Walmart. 6,000 people applied. Now, if this were at IBM or, you know, maybe even General Motors or someplace, and I don't know where that is anymore, I should say, that's still paying big money, one might understand 6,000 people vying for 300 jobs. But at a Walmart in Cleveland, Ohio, for God's sake? Oh, that's a fantastic number. And the jobs, as you well know, are low-paying, lower-skilled positions. And the idea that those are the kind of jobs that people are having to fight for these days is just more than a little bit disconcerting. That's for certain. I wanted to ask the question today, and by the way, you can join the program at 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. We hope you'll give us a call today. Do you think, and there seems to be two definite opinions on this, there's no gray area, I don't think. Will Oprah Winfrey jumping in and campaigning for Obama, will that do him a lot of good? Will it harm her? But will it do Obama a lot of good? I mean, I've got ambivalent feelings about Oprah. Most guys, I should say a lot of guys do, in my experience. She's done some good things with charity work and all that. She's done some, as far as I'm concerned, some bad things. Or stupid things, I should say. Dr. Phil's one of those. Don't get that one. I really don't. But anyway, do you think that'll be a big deal? Do you think Obama getting the backing, and of course she's endorsed him a long time ago, but she's going to go out on the campaign trail in Iowa and then New Hampshire and stump for Obama. And I wonder if that's going to make any kind of a difference at all. We shall see. We shall see. It should be interesting. And thank God, this little note I found in the news today, and it's a pet peeve of mine, and I thank the police from Dayton, Ohio, for doing something about it. Now, I don't know any police from Dayton, Ohio, but I do want to thank them. I see they're handing out $500 tickets. $500 if you get caught parking in a handicap space without a permit. It's about damn time. I think that is just absolutely great. $500, make it hurt. How many times have you seen that? Oh, my, I certainly see it a lot myself, and I don't know why I get so upset over it. It just bothers me to see the handicapped spaces all taken up, and there's one or two sitting there. There's always somebody that thinks they own the place, right? I mean, you go to the grocery store, and there's always some clown parked right out front of the front door of the big supermarket, always parked in the fire lane where you're not allowed to park. And depending on what mood I'm in, I have been known to, yes, I have done this. I like to go up, and when I'm feeling in a particularly, I guess, foul mood, go up and tap on their window, particularly when they drive and park right on the crosswalk area, you know, where they got the stripes across where you park, walk from the parking lot into the store. A lot of these clowns like to park right there. They're too lazy to, you know, they let their party out and don't even move the car away from the crosswalk. Those are the ones that I usually go up and tap on the window, and they run their window down. It's usually a luxury car. And they run their window down, and I say, "Excuse me, could I have your autograph, please?" And they always look at me in puzzled silence and say, "My autograph?" "Yes, your autograph. I figured that since you're parked here in a no-parking zone and blocking the crosswalk that you must indeed be somebody famous or very important. Could I have your autograph?" That usually gets the window back up. You know, I've never had a single person ever come back with an answer on that one. I don't know why. Yeah, I know. I do things like that. I do. Somebody's looking at me funny here. I pulled up at the stop sign the other day, and I've done this a bunch of times. I've probably mentioned it on the show before. I pulled up at a stop sign yesterday after following this one car down the road. I got to the right of him at the stop sign, and there's a big old W04 sticker still on the back of that car. Nice car. And I put my window down, and the guy put his window down. I said, "Man, am I sorry." I said, "Somebody has pulled a terrible trick on you, vandalized the back of your car." And they go, "What? What's wrong with my car?" I said, "Oh, somebody put a Bush 04 sticker on the back." And usually they don't argue about that either. They just put their window up. But you would think somebody that would be driving around with a Bush 04 sticker would be rather confrontational, but they're not. They usually just wusses and don't say a whole lot. Well, so much for crazy things that I do. 866-546-5254. We talk a lot about this show, and we'll talk about politics here in just a little bit. But we talk about a lot of things on this program, and one of the things that's been bothering me a lot lately, and I know a lot of you as well, and I get plenty of email about it, and there's stories every single day in the news about it, is the downturn in the housing market. And, you know, for several months we've been hearing about the slump in the housing market and the losses that are being suffered because of it. I see it here locally on a tremendous scale. And really only recently have we begun to hear the just staggering results of what can only be classified, in my opinion, as a full-fledged feeding frenzy of greed. Unadulterated greed, actually, by our financial markets. Some people use coke, some people use heroin, others use marijuana, but for Wall Street bankers, now and forevermore, it always has been, the drug of choice is just pure greed. And this whole system was being driven, and still is, by a small group of executives whose only interest is in building massive wealth for themselves and in as little time as possible, and then walking out the door and looking for another money tree to pick bare. And you would think, after all we've been through the past few years with the likes of Enron and WorldCom and the financial markets, you'd think they would have learned something. You might think they would have taken the hint that, given unlimited corporate power, most of these high-powered executives will take all the corn and leave the cobs in the bank vault. I mean, that's just how it works. That's how it's always worked. And how can it be that no lesson has been learned from that experience? And I'll tell you how it be. It's because that those in charge don't want to learn that lesson, because they're all waiting in line to take their turns at raiding the company's cookie jar. You know, and anybody with even a decent knowledge of economics 101, I guess we called it in school, should have an inkling. They certainly should have had an inkling a couple of years ago that something was awry here. And we had nonstop TV commercials touting the fact that almost anybody who could breathe could get a 100% home loan, no money down. Even 125% loans were commonly available. You know, no documentation they advertised, no proof of income, bad credit's okay. Just come on in, folks, sign your name, and this beautiful overpriced home is yours. And you know the old story, they have little small letters down at the bottom, an ARM. What's an ARM, you ask? Well, don't worry about that. Look at this beautiful kitchen. Yeah. Oh, the closing cost? Nah, don't worry about that. We'll include them in your home loan. And be sure to look at the spa tub in the bathroom and the size of that master bedroom. Man, oh man, oh man. And don't worry. When the interest rates go up, they'll not go up much, and lots of times they go down. So don't worry about that ARM. It's just, you know. And besides, at the rate prices are going up, you can probably refinance this baby in only a few months and take out some cash. Prices are going up so fast. I mean, just look how much it's gone up in the past year or so. So you're sure to be in on a real estate bonanza like never before. That's the story. That's the story we heard over and over and over again. You know, massive profits were being made by builders selling overpriced homes to millions of consumers who couldn't afford them. I personally know real estate agents who got rich during that time. They actually had people standing in line to buy homes. And I don't know about where you live, but I can tell you that right here I can think of at least five massive developments in very close proximity to where I live, where people stood in line for a couple of days in front of an empty field with nothing but a sales office on it, and drew numbers to see who was going to get the privilege of buying yet-to-be-constructed homes and condos at prices that started out at least $100,000 over what they're worth. This is a fact. I know a couple from Ohio that came to Florida to buy a second home, and were taking the standard tour of the new developments, one whole day by a prominent agent here in this area, and they picked out three homes they like. Three. And they got the spiel by the agent, you know, you better buy one of these babies quick because they're going fast. And they were. That was not a lie. They picked out three homes that they like, and they were urged to make immediate offers on them, and they did. They were encouraged to offer the full asking price on the homes, which they did. Imagine that. No dealing. Oh, no. They were informed the next day after bidding on three homes in the same day, bidding the full asking price the same day, that they didn't get any of those homes because other buyers had offered more than the asking price. That's how crazy it got here. I was just talking about this with a friend the other day. We've got personal knowledge of one of these homes that these people from Ohio were bidding on. It sold then for $435,000. $435,000. Sold the same day it was put on the market. That's just how it was. It was recently resold at $255,000. Imagine that, $180,000 it went back. It went down. That's about 40%. That's how bad it's gotten here and in several other areas of the country. Here in Las Vegas and Phoenix and California and a couple more areas had huge reductions in value of property. Even places traditionally safe, Midwest areas, have experienced about a 14% drop in prices. It's crazy. But you see, there are still plenty of wealthy investors ready and willing to come in, you know, swoop in and pick up the pieces when the devaluation hits the rock bottom, which I don't think we've seen yet. And I recently saw an interview with one of what I call the vulture real estate investors, someone who sits idly by while the chaos is taking place in the housing market. You know, prices drop drastically because of massive foreclosures and overbuilding, and then they swoop in and buy the properties at fire sale prices. That whole scene wasn't going to last. And sure enough, it didn't. And we're in free fall with no end in sight right now. You know, fortunes were made by American people selling each other homes, which were being paid for by borrowed Chinese money. We had many, many, many warning signs, but the greedy kept right on feeding at the money trough, even after the bubble was bursting. They want to be sure and get their dessert before the buffet table was closed. And if you dig deep enough, and I did on this, you'll find that places like Merrill Lynch was still buying bad debt this year. Yes, their biggest purchase of bad debt was made this year when the subprime crash was well known to almost everyone. Guess why? Because of personal greed by their leaders. And guess who's going to pay the bill? Yes, you got it. Bear Stearns and Citigroup and Merrill Lynch and a few other financial institutions lost a bundle for their shareholders. But that's not the most important story here. Millions of families are losing their homes because of massive increases in their payments from the too-easy-to-get ARMs, the adjustable-rate mortgages. Millions of people are receiving notices of foreclosure from the local courts. Wall Street analysts are predicting losses of at least $450 billion. And some people think that $450 billion is the bottom-end figure. But that's only part of the story. The big part of this is that losses are going to make huge cutbacks in lending. And that might be as much as $2 trillion, they estimate, out of the pool available for business and home loans. And if that happens, we're in for one hell of a recession. You can count on that. My question is, how could the boards of these companies have allowed this to happen? How could they have allowed the CEOs to participate in this massive risk to their shareholders and still pay them huge, huge, and by any measure, totally unreasonable compensation after finding out that they'd lost billions for their companies? I wish somebody could properly explain this logic to me. They hired these guys who have left with massive payoffs, like we've heard about lately, figures like $150 million, $48 million for running a company while they're losing billions of dollars. That whole thing just seems a little bit out of whack to me. How can you look at somebody in the eye and have your hand out for tens of millions of dollars knowing that you failed in your job? You failed. Think about that. How can the checkout guy down at the local supermarket or drugstore get fired for having their drawer come up 20 bucks short at the end of the day, and yet the Wall Street executive gets a train carload of cash after coming up a few billion short? What's wrong with this picture? How fair is it that the stockholders of that company got screwed like this? How fair is it to Americans who won't be able to get mortgages because of tightening credit? People who deserve mortgages, but they won't be able to get them. How fair is it to small businessmen around the country who can't, you know, they can't get business loans they need to expand? People with good credit. And if nothing at all is done about it, it's only going to make it easier for it to happen again and again and again. And all you have to do, if you're the top executive in one of these companies, is to be good at using smoke and mirrors to hide your performance for just a little while, and then back an armored car up to the company vault and haul out massive piles of cash. And we've seen this happen over and over and over again. And they say, well, you know, guy, they didn't do anything illegal. Maybe not. It might be true that these company executives, some of them here lately, may not be guilty of any fraud or crime. But I ask you, what is the difference between them and Kenny Lay or Bernie Ebbers? They all accumulated massive wealth either through fraud or failure, neither of which should ever be rewarded. But let's face it, it's not a problem that's going to be resolved anytime soon. First of all, because it's not seen as a problem by the powers that be on Wall Street, and most of all, because the public outrage over it just doesn't exist, not all that much, especially from those who resent a single mother from getting some government food for her kids. They see that as just something, just absolutely awful. But a guy walking away with a $148 million parachute out of a company where he's failed, that's okay. You know, that's business. That's okay. Sickens me when I see situations like that. It really does. 866-546-5254. Love to have you give us a call here today. We want to talk about money matters like that today. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Hello, I'm George W. Bush, and an American citizen needs your help. His name? Alberto Gonzalez. See, little Alberto bravely and patriotically broke the law, and now he just might be charged for his crimes. But you can help by calling 1-800-I-DON'T-RECALL and donating to little Alberto's legal defense fund. Every little bit helps, $100,000, $500,000, whatever you can afford. Right, Fredo? I don't recall. That's right. That's right.
I frame the question in these stark terms.
Are we going to continue to invest American blood and treasure at the same rate we are doing now? For what?
If we continue what you have laid before the Congress here as a strategy, do you feel that that is making America safer?
Sir, I don't know, actually.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year, and a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run without scissors,
it's the least you can do.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network on this Tuesday. And still we're, 30-some days away from the first primary. God help us. We've got to go through this until these primaries get started and get underway. How much of this are we going to be able to take? Oh, I've really had it. I really have. I don't know about you, but I'm finding the primaries are just getting more and more. I'm getting more disinterested in them all the time. I really am. I think I know what the outcome's going to be. Maybe I'll be proven wrong, and then I won't feel like this ever again. But it's just, I'm just getting tired of it. I really am. I mean, how much, I watch the news. You know, you wonder where the priorities are. I watched a little bit of news yesterday on CNN. Yeah, it was CNN. And I don't know, it's about 10 or 12 minutes worth of news. And I keep a notepad there handy by the TV in case I see something I want to write down. And I jotted a few things down. In the 10 or 12 minutes it was that I listened to the news, they had a story about Cheney going back to work after his, his little problem. They had a one-minute story about the primary election. They talked, it seemed like forever, but it was only 2 or 3 minutes, about the, what's her name, Natalie Holloway, the Aruba thing. They had a story on Starbucks. They had a story on this peace conference, whatever you want to call it, in Annapolis, which is a joke so far. And a story about the NFL player who was shot. I don't follow NFL football, so I'm sorry. I don't mean to be disrespectful, but I don't know the gentleman's name that was killed. All of that, I don't know, was 10, 12 minutes worth of news. Never mentioned a war. We've got two wars going on. Here is 10 or 12 minutes worth of news on a major news company. Not a mention of the war. How can this be? How can this be? Is the news Are the news people that insensitive? Are they that incompetent? Or, I guess the better answer is, are the American people that apathetic? I guess they are. Thank God we haven't been inundated with Paris Hilton stories lately, but we certainly have had our number of Britney Spears and all the rest. The Hollywood thing has just gotten me down. The Hollywood worship thing in this country has done a number on me. I just can't stand it anymore. But, you know, we've got serious issues in this country and in this world. And here we've got our news media out talking about Britney Spears and the Holloway. I mean, that's a tragic story, the Holloway thing, and the Starbucks coffee and all that. Where's the real news? I don't know. I just, it bothers me. It really does. Anyway, you can give us a call, 866-546-5254. In the news, before I get back to the financial news of the day, the financial story of the day, I did want to mention this, this story coming from the right, and their smear machine is certainly started up. It's not in full force yet, but it will soon. I want you to remember, and I think you know this without me mentioning it, that the right-wing smear machine will be out in numbers this year. It'll be more powerful than ever. It'll be like you've never, ever seen before. Hence the story from the Drudge Report that Hillary Clinton's having a lesbian love affair with one of her aides. How long do you have to live on this planet before you figure out that Matt Drudge is a freaking gossip monger? He's a leech. He's a parasite. He's a scourge. And yet he's highly respected by people on the right. Why? Because he writes stories like Hillary Clinton is having a lesbian love affair with one of her aides. Matt Drudge. Where will it all end? I fear that that's just the beginning. I think that they'll probably follow up on that story, manufacture some more about it. First of all, who cares? What has that got to do with her leadership abilities in this country? And secondly, what in the world is causing that to be, supposedly big news? It's just, I don't know, it sickens me, it really does. I want to get back to her for a moment. If you got any thoughts on that, you're welcome to give us a call, 866-546-5254. I wanted to get back to the story about financial matters here and the home mortgage crisis and all that. Lots of people having their mortgages payments go up by 25-30% because of these adjustable rate mortgage. I mean, there's some god awful stories. I know a couple of people had that happen to them. Got no interest loans, Don't worry about it. Price of your house will go up, and then you can sell it, and all you'll have to do is have paid the interest. This Bill Gross, the chief investment officer at PIMCO, which is the world's biggest bond fund. I heard him say we haven't faced a downturn like this since the Great Depression. Now, those are some tough words right there. We haven't faced a downturn like this since the Great Depression. And that's from the chief investment officer of the world's biggest bond fund. I would suggest to you that he knows a little bit of what he's talking about. Those are powerful words. But it's having an effect across the board, this home mortgage crisis. It's having a big effect across the board. Consumption. I mean, Christmas shopping is going to be down. It already is. I guess Black Friday, except for the fact that many of these places offered huge discounts to lure people into their stores. As far as profit, they weren't all that happy. And it's going to have an effect on future lending. And, you know, if many people are predicting that we're going to go down to zero economic growth, and if we do that, we're going to be in tough shape, because zero economic growth translates into to the loss of millions of jobs. Millions. I'm not talking tens of thousands here. Millions of jobs. And, you know, there's 600 and some billion dollars of these. I saw an article today of these subprime adjustable rate mortgage loans out that are supposed to be reset in higher amounts during the next 8 months. Imagine that. We haven't faced the worst of this by any means yet. And so this is not going to be over with anytime soon. And if we continue to have the default rate that we have right now, with millions of these loans coming up to be reset in the next few months, it might cause an economic shock like we haven't seen in, like he said, since the Depression. And it might cause the entire economy to spiral out of control. And I don't have to tell people that live where I live here in Florida, people in Las Vegas, people in Phoenix, people in California, that their property values have just plummeted drastically. I mean, huge drops in that's money that is taken out of the economy. That's money people that refinanced and paid debt with and so forth. I mean, it's money that's gone. And not only that, there's a lot of folks losing their jobs who worked in the financial market. You know, financial services. There's been well over 100,000 people. And, you know, when it gets down to that, it starts affecting the car dealers and retailers of all kinds. And anybody that's dependent on consumer paychecks. So, you know, they're talking about it, that we get down to a zero growth rate again, that unemployment would probably go up to around 6.5%. And that would knock out about 3 million jobs from our economy. And believe me, we can't take a hit like that. And you see stories now and then that, well, you know, it's going to bottom out soon. Maybe the worst is over. Things are going to get better. Yeah, they'll get better sometime. Of that, I am absolutely sure. But here's the worst statistic of all in this whole story, is that borrowers who took out loans in the first 6 months of this year are already falling behind on their payments faster than those who took out loans in 2006. That's from a big investment firm in Arlington, Virginia. So, you know, that's making it harder for people who want to buy a home to get a new mortgage. They're looking down their nose at everybody right now, even people with sterling credit going into the bank. Well, you know, things are kind of tight. And, you know, we got home builders who have projects sitting here with thousands of homes. I'm talking thousands for sale. And what does that do to the guy down the street that wants to simply sell his house and downsize? You know, he and the wife are ready to retire and go on Social Security. They want to get a smaller home. Their nest egg has been their home. And they decide to sell their place. They can't. Because you got a monster development down the road that's two-thirds empty and every place in it for sale, and you can't sell them. So it's got far, far-reaching effects on the entire economy. And who knows when this is all going to be over with. I think we're far, far away from seeing the bottom. Far away from seeing the bottom. I just saw an article the other day from the Miami Herald. There are over 133,000 homes on the market in Broward, Miami, Dade counties. 133,000. And lots of people over there just walking away from their houses. They don't even bother to tell anybody about it. Just packing up what little they own and walking away. And, you know, I don't have to tell you that that's got an effect on every one of us. That's just not something that the bank has to put up with. Like I said, that's got an effect on the economy that's absolutely huge all the way around. The guy selling, you know, guy with a local restaurant, the guy with the dry cleaner, the laundromat, any little business you can think of, they're getting hurt by this. I don't know how business is where you are. I have an idea. But I do know that we're only in the first stages of this, and I think that is absolutely a fact. 866-546-5254. We'll be back in just a moment.
I, Pat Robertson, have just spoken to God, and I and God hereby endorse Rudy Giuliani for president.
Praise Jesus!
Yes, this pro-choice, pro-abortion, pro-gay, homo-loving, twice-divorced, once-married to his cousin man is in perfect alignment with our Christian values.
Praise Jesus!
And he, like me, thinks that 9/11 was caused by abortion, porn, and queers.
Praise.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Tune in to Foxed Up with John Fox this Thursday night at his new time, midnight Eastern. We'll take a look at England's bad girl, Amy Winehouse.
I'm someone who can't keep my mouth shut. I will just say what's on my mind, and they will put me in the paper for that. They will say, oh, and she's bitter and twisted about stuff.
So be there, Thursday night, midnight Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
They tried to make me go to rehab. I said no, no, no. Yes, I've been black, but when I come back, no.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Ladies and gentlemen, Rush Limbaugh!
They say that I'm sleaze and elitist. You please, everybody disagrees with my rap.
It's rap.
I'm horrendous, I'm appalling. My ratings now are falling, because I'm so full of bull, so full of crap.
Full of crap.
With condescending tribes making money selling lies. You might say, everybody hates my guts.
Hates his guts.
I'm offensive, I'm a bigot, I'm a fraud. Can you dig it? I'm a sexist, racist, homophobic, fat, pathetic, tuts.
I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
That's right.
I really am.
Cause I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
That's right.
You're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
I don't care about the middle class, cause I'm a fat conservative butthead with the face of a horse's ass.
He's a fat conservative butthead.
Hey, I have a subhuman figure, a huge rear end. My brain? That's another story.
It's quite another
story. I have a face the size of a wash tub. And my ass is as big as Missouri. Yes!
This bastard is sick. He's a fat mob.
Is
big and his ass is as big as Missouri.
Yes, Terry Bob! Manipulating statements exaggerate the truth. I can't believe they hate my show. Inspires. It's not just because I'm stupid. It's not just because I'm scum. It's just because Republicans are liars. I am heartless. I am vain, insensitive, insane. They say that I'm a national disgrace. I am nasty, insulting, basically revolting. I'm a concentrated pile of human waste. Because I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
Hi. I really am, because I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi.
That's right. You're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
He's a Nazi. I don't care about the middle classes. I'm a sick Republican sleazeball with the face of a horse's ass.
He's a sick Republican sleazeball with the face of a horse's ass.
They say that this is not about my vanity. They doubt my sanity. They think I'm nuts.
So nuts.
I am a cyst on the ass of humanity.
Yeah.
New Republican slogan. Read my tuts. From the bowels of evil comes the voice of Rush Limbaugh. In closing, let me say that each and every day I'm an evil, rotten, egotistical snob.
Evil, rotten.
I'm the capo, the cop of Joe McCarthy like Gestapo, the right wing, foam of the mouth, jack booted slob, the democratic trashing, years of liberal bashing with the equivalent compassion of a grommet. With the IQ of a fig, I'm a fat, obnoxious pig. And the truth of the matter is, I'm vomit.
Because
I'm a Nazi.
He's a
Nazi. Hi.
I really am, because I'm a Nazi.
Hi.
You're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
I don't care about the middle class, because I'm a fear-mongering scumbag with the face of a horse's ass.
He's a fat conservative buckhead.
Hey, Republican sleazeball. Fear-mongering scumbag.
Oh.
Egotistical ass bite.
Yes.
Mean-spirited, hog-wallering fat conservative tots.
With the face of a horse's ass.
My administration looked at the intelligence, and we saw a threat. Members of Congress looked at the intelligence, and they saw a threat. The United Nations Security Council looked at the intelligence, and it saw a threat.
Very funny.
Tell us what you think. Call Guy James now, 1-866-546-5254.
Thanks for joining us here today on the Guy James Show. Good to have all of you along with us here on the Head On Radio Network. I invite all of you folks over at iTunes and Democratic Underground and Democrats.com and Smirking Chimp, wherever you are on a forum and you want to join in today, you can join the chat room, and we hope you do, at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. It just takes a moment to sign up. No, they don't require you to put up your firstborn for collateral or credit cards or anything like that. Just register, get your username on there. You can join the chat, and it's fun, and it's free. And we hope you'll avail yourself of this great service by the Head On Radio Network. Do it. You hear? Okay. We were talking about financial issues before we went away to break, and you wonder sometimes how they come up with these deals. You know, Citigroup that got rid of, you might as well say, they canned him. He didn't just walk out, but he walked out with a semi-truckload of money. But Citigroup is still looking for a new chief executive, but they have found somebody to kind of help bail them out. Citigroup is America's largest bank, and they're out looking for capital. And so what do? They find the good folks over at Abu Dhabi or in the Middle East to give them $7.5 billion to put into capital. $7.5 billion. Here you go, boys. I don't know if it's cash or check or by credit card, but Citigroup has got an infusion of cash from Abu Dhabi government. I don't know if it's the government. $7.5 billion. Thus shoring up its capital after billions in write-offs related to these subprime mortgages we're talking about. So they will get securities. It is a state investment fund from the country of Abu Dhabi, and they'll get something like 4.9% stake in Citibank. It's a sizable investment. Forbes magazine says it's a sizable investment at a time when many investors and pundits are calling for major changes at Citigroup. So one of Citigroup's largest individual shareholders, Saudi Arabia's Prince Alawi bin Talal, who is said to hold about a 4% stake, has pressed for tighter cost controls. You see who owns this bank really now, right? Tighter cost controls at the, that's what they're asking for. At least somebody is. Somebody's wanting them to do it the right way. Man, oh man, oh man. Unbelievable, the money these people have floating around. Hey, let's head on over to the phone. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show. Well, I guess we got a good old dial tone there. Hope whoever it is calls back. Okay. Don't know what happened there. Hey, I see our good friend, and I say that with firmly having my tongue in cheek, our good friend Tucker Carlson. They're kind of saying that maybe Tucker's on the way out. He's got the second lowest rated show on TV, second only to that idiot Glenn Beck. Did any of you watch Glenn Beck? I've seen about 10 minutes of him in total, and I wonder... You know, did he escape from a freak show? What is it with Glenn Beck? I just don't get that one. I really don't. But anyway, well, here we have our caller back again. Let's try this once again. Nope. Well, we won't answer that number anymore. All right. Anyway, on Tucker Carlson last night, they had Bob Franken on. I know you all know who Bob Franken is. Anyway, on the Media Matters reported in on this. On the 26th of November edition of MSNBC, Tucker, former CNN correspondent Bob Franken, described President Bush and former Vice President Al Gore as being as different as night and day, because Bush was raised in the oil patch in Texas, while Gore was raised in a hotel in Washington and went to St. Albans, a very cheeky private school. In contrasting the childhood experiences of Bush and Gore, Franken misled MSNBC viewers about both men, resurrecting false storylines that were common in media coverage of the 2000 presidential campaign. Franken's comment reflects a claim often made by Bush himself during his 2000 presidential campaign that the biggest difference between me and my father is that he went to a Greenwich Country Day and I went to San Jacinto Junior High. In fact, Bush went to a private high school every bit as cheeky as St. Albans. He went to Phillips Academy in Andover, Massachusetts, where he was, if you remember, the head football cheerleader during his senior year. And let's do remember that is one of his great accomplishments. Furthermore, Franken's comments reflect a total distortion of Gore's childhood that was common during the 2000 campaign. I mean, what didn't they do to Al Gore in the way of lying during a 2000 campaign? Swore that he said he invented the internet and all this and that. They repeated it over and over and over again that he was raised in a vast penthouse suite in the elegant and swank Fairfax Hotel, a luxury Washington hotel, when in fact the Gores lived in a modest two-bedroom suite in which Gore shared a bedroom with his sister. It was that small. The supposedly swank hotel featured linoleum floors and was, according to an October 26, 1998 Washington Post article, popular with Foreign Service families because the hotel apartments were the only ones with kitchen that were within the State Department's stingy temporary housing allowance. So this was no palace where Al Gore was raised. Meanwhile, here we have Bob Franken saying that, you know, trying to put off that poor Bushy boy was literally raised in poverty while Gore was in the lap of luxury. Now, neither one of them were hurting. That's a fact. But is this an example of the liberal media? The liberal media that they're always talking about? By the way, I guess I mentioned, I hear Tucker, it's around the grapevine that Tucker's show may soon be canceled. The former bow tie wearing boy might have his show canceled, so I don't know yet. The jury's still out on it, but there are rumblings in MSNBC that might be the case. And another example, I was looking around for examples. You know, this liberal media thing is starting up again with a vengeance. And saw some statistics from Nightline, ABC's Nightline, and again from Media Matters. They said last Friday marked something of a milestone for ABC's widely acclaimed news program, Nightline, when it aired a detailed look at life inside the chaotic emergency room at the 28th Combat Support Hospital in Baghdad. The significance? It was the first time since July the 18th. That's almost, what, last Friday. 4 months. 4 months. First time since July 18th that Nightline had broadcast a first-hand news report from Iraq, examining the on-the-ground effects of the still-unfolding war there. In the 4 months plus in between, Nightline produced more than 230 separate new segments covering a kaleidoscope of topics, but just one was filmed in Iraq, a Green Zone-based profile of General David Petraeus, on the eve of his Capitol Hill testimony. And as for the daily or weekly events of the war itself, for 18 straight weeks, Nightline effectively walked away from Iraq. What took its place? Lots of Nightline reports on pets and pop music. You know, you remember Nightline hosted Ted Koppel, and Ted Koppel was embedded with the Army's 3rd Infantry Division for a little over a month, reporting first from Kuwait, and then moving with the Army across the border into Iraq before they finally went to Baghdad, where he talked about the fall of the city. But, like many others, they just walked away from it. You will remember that in the spring of 2004, Koppel and Nightline made headlines when he committed to reading the names of the 721 at the time. God, that seems so long ago, doesn't it? At that time, in January of 2004, there were 721 U.S. soldiers who had died, and he was going to read the names of them, and did, on one of his shows. But the Sinclair Broadcasting Group, owners of several ABC affiliate stations, refused to air the program, calling Koppel's tribute a political act. More liberal media. A political act. Given even the slightest respect to 721 dead soldiers by merely reading their names, and that's a political act. More accusations about liberal media. My, my. We live in interesting times, don't we? And I see that the last of Bushy's big allies is gone. Prime Minister Howard in Australia, he's gone. Aznar in Spain is gone. Blair's gone. Howard's gone. And the new Prime Minister of Australia says he's going to take all the Australian troops out of Iraq. The Spanish, I believe, are gone already, and a significant number of the British are gone already. You know, what do all these guys have in common, Aznar, Blair, and Howard? They all been touched by the Bush reverse Midas touch. Everything he's touched has turned to crap, and I believe that Blair and Aznar and Howard are all pretty keenly aware of that right now. By aligning themselves with Junior Bush, they all ruined their political careers. The citizens of their countries have repudiated these allies of Junior Bush, and they're all willingly, you know, they all jumped right in with him and his ill-begotten adventure into Iraq, and each of their countries has lost significant blood and treasure because of their leader's stupid decision to suck up to Bush Jr. Wonder what they thought they were gaining by sucking up to Junior Bush, Aznar and Howard and Blair. Love to know the answer to that question. Really would. Oh my, we're coming up to the top of the hour already. One of those days that time is flying by. We've got a lot to talk about in the second hour, and I do hope you'll join us. And you can join the program. 866-546-5254. We hope you'll do that. I see on C-SPAN about there's a story about presidential libraries, and someone sent this to me. Here's the draft plans for the George W. Bush Library. They're going to have the Alberto Gonzalez Room, where you can remember where you can't remember any of the exhibits. They're going to have the Hurricane Katrina Room, which is still under construction, and the George Bush Library. They're going to have the Texas Air National Guard Room, where you don't even have to show up. They'll have the Walter Reed Hospital Room, where they don't let you in. They'll have the Guantanamo Bay Room, where they don't let you out. They're going to have the Weapons of Mass Destruction Room. Nobody's been able to find it. And they're going to have a War in Iraq Room. And after you complete your first tour, they're going to force you to go back for a second, third, and fourth, and fifth tour of that lovely room. And the K Street Project gift shop, where you can buy an election, or if nobody cares, you can steal one. And in the Bush Library, they'll have a men's room, of course. They will have a men's room where you can meet one or two Republican politicians in there. Of course, we wouldn't want to leave that out. So there's lots going on in this Bush Library, and it says, to be fair, the president has done some good things. So the museum will have an electron microscope to help you locate them. And when asked, President Bush said they didn't care so much about the individual exhibits as long as his museum was better than his father's. Well, doesn't that sound absolutely appropriate for that boy? Well, you're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Billy Shearer's music director. And we're going to be back right after the news at the top of the hour, and I hope you will join us.
This is the Quality News Network. Stocks rebounded in early trading after yesterday's declines. We'll have the numbers for you in the business segment. A one-day Middle East peace summit in Annapolis, Maryland has gotten underway with Israeli and Palestinian leaders agreeing to launch good faith bilateral negotiations towards a peace treaty. The long-awaited talks aim to break through a seven-year stalemate between the two. Iran's defense minister says his country's developed a new missile capable of reaching Israel and U.S. military bases in the Middle East. The 1,200-mile missile has yet to be tested. The defense ministers of South and North Korea are holding a landmark meeting today to discuss a resolution of a long-standing border dispute in the West Sea. In Pakistan, President General Pervez Musharraf says farewell to troops today. He's expected to officially resign tomorrow as head of the country's army. Thursday, Musharraf will be sworn in for a new term as Pakistan's president. President Bush has signed a deal for a long-term U.S. troop presence in Iraq. The details are still to be negotiated. Iraqi officials foresee a long-term presence of around 50,000 U.S. troops. Two high-ranking Republican senators say the current Iraqi government must make strides towards reconciliation soon or face a loss of both financial and political support. For the second night, young people rioted in a Paris suburb. Dozens of police officers were injured. The riots were sparked when two boys were killed Sunday in a police chase. Vice President Dick Cheney is back on the job following a heart procedure yesterday at George Washington University Hospital. His heart received a shock to restore its regular rhythm. The 66-year-old vice president has a history of heart problems. In Sacramento, state and federal officials are investigating a dredging project by the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation that's killed thousands of game fish. The Bureau drained water around a protected island, apparently without knowing the number of fish in the area. The highest rate of AIDS in the U.S. is in Washington, D.C., according to a report produced by city health officials. Of the more than 12,000 citizens infected with HIV in Washington, 80% are black. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
I know your secret. Nobody told me, but I know. Every time your little girl wants you to read her a story and you tell her you're too busy, I know. When your boy needs help with homework and you tell him to ask his mother, I know. Your wife asks you whether the warranty is still good on the broken dishwasher and you tell her you're too tired to look for it, I know. You're very good at keeping the secret, but it does take a lot of effort to keep the charade going. It could be very scary and embarrassing if anyone found out. But I know your secret. You can't read. Neither can 93 million American adults. You're in big company. Instead of running scared, become a hero in your own family. Find a local literacy program at your library. It's free. The day you whisper in your wife's ear, "Honey, I can read," just watch how big her smile is.
This message on literacy has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your local library.
Consumer confidence slipped to the lowest level in 2 years due to worries about rising fuel costs and the sliding housing market. U.S. home prices also fell during September in all 20 major cities included in the Case-Shiller Price Index, even in so-called bubble cities previously unaffected by the slump. The U.S. Conference of Mayors says it expects another 1.4 million Americans will lose their homes next year as a result of the collapsing mortgage market. U.S. blue chip stocks are recovering after yesterday's tumble to a 7-month low. Experts say a factor in the upswing is the infusion of $7.5 billion into Citigroup by the Abu Dhabi Investment Authority. Experts say the move is seen as a vote of confidence, much needed by the U.S. largest bank. Citigroup needs the capital to protect it from its mortgage losses. The price of oil is heading back down as traders react to rumors that OPEC will increase crude production when the cartel meets next week. Light sweet crude is trading at $95.18 a barrel. Gold is trading at $814.50 an ounce. That's down $12. At last check of the Dow, it is up 169 points at 12,912. The Nasdaq's up 25 and the S&P 500 up 11. This is QNN.
Throw the third switch! Not the third switch! Throw it!
morning show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey there, and welcome back to the Guy James Show. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. It's good to have all of you along with us. I see we've got a lively audience today, although not a lively audience that wants to do too much phoning. That's okay. That's okay. If you like to sit back and listen today, why, that's just fine with me as well. As you know, I can do a fair amount of talking when I have to. Hey, taking a look at this political scene, I was noticing a story last night. The Republicans are starting to talk about, the only thing they're talking about is winning the White House, because they are well aware of the fact that they're not going to win the Senate. Unless something just absolutely wild, crazy, and drastic happens, it's just completely unforeseen. And they're not going to win the House back. They know that. In fact, they're going to probably face even more significant deficits in the House than they have now. And the interesting thing is, and lest you think a lot of these politicians are there because of altruistic reasons, you know, I want to give back, I want to do service for my country and all that. Hey, there are 6 Republicans who are going to get out of the Senate. And, of course, we all know Senator Craig from Idaho, and we know he's getting out. He's getting out because he just can't stand the restroom scene anymore. It's been too hard on him. Senator Allard from Colorado is getting out for personal reasons. Hagel from Nebraska is getting out. Domenici, I see where he actually does have some health problems, but he said he's just had enough. And now old helmet head Trent Lott is getting out. 6 of them. And I forgot Warner. Warner from Virginia, and he's just, thank you, Senator Warner, for realizing that there comes a time in your life that you should step down and enjoy your senior years. I respect him for that anyway. But, you know, Lott, you will almost definitely see Lott show up in the on K Street before long. I think you can bet good money on that, just like Denny Hastert resigned. They have a new rule taking effect in January 1st, I believe it is, where you can't work for a lobbyist organization for a couple of years. Well, Denny Hastert got out before it took effect, so that won't cover him. Most of these guys go on and lobby and make big money, and I think we can safely assume that Lott's going to do that. And Craig, I don't know if anybody will have him. Allard is filthy rich himself. Warner's well-heeled himself. Hagel, I don't know what he's going to do. But after, you know, people like Lott and Domenici, they should have a pretty nice nest egg, all the money they've made in the government. But I guess my whole point of bringing this up is it's no fun being in the minority. And as long as you're riding high and you're the chairman of the powerful committees and you're calling the shots, why, you know, you're in the big old power grab and greed and all that. You have control of it. Why, let's just keep running. But now we see six Republican senators going to drop out. Because it's just not fun being in the minority. You virtually don't have a whole lot of say. And unless, of course, you run up against a weak Senate minority or majority leader like Harry Reid, and you're able to block. You can't do anything yourself, but you can block the Democrats from doing anything they want to do. That's the way it's turned out so far. So hang in there. Some of these places, it might get interesting. New Mexico, for example, there's some good Democrats running in New Mexico. We may have a chance to take that one. We may have a chance to take the seat in Virginia. Idaho, probably not. Colorado will have a chance. Nebraska will have a chance. So we could get a significant majority upsurge here coming up in the Senate this coming year. And I have no doubts that the Democrats will gain a nice majority in the Senate. You know, something you can work with, that the Republicans won't be able to block every damn thing. That would take that SOB Lieberman off the bubble. I would love that, to shut him up. And, you know, he's been very effective at working with the Republicans so far. He's been caucusing with Democrats, he says. He tells his people back home, but he's, you know, he's, for all intents and purposes, I don't know why he just doesn't come out and say it. The guy is a Republican, has been a Republican for a long time. I jotted myself down a note here I wanted to tell you. I see the, you know, they're going back to it again, and I hear it all the time. You know what the most popular right-wing T-shirt is right now? It's for sale on the internet and in stores everywhere. Popular right-wing T-shirt, and it just simply says on the front of it, "Re-defeat communism." That's right. We're all commie pinkos again. They're starting to bring it back. Re-defeat communism. Now, where is it in the country that, where is it that communism is big? Oh, that's right, Cuba. Yeah, that's right. It's a huge threat down there. I don't think communism is going to be a threat to us whatsoever. I think by the time China takes over the world, takes over the power, they probably won't be communist anymore. Significant amount of capitalism taking place there right now. But one of the other things I did want to bring to light, oftentimes I talk to you about where we broadcast from here in Southwest Florida, be in the heart of darkness for Republicans. And it is. Lee County, I'm kind of in the middle here, but Lee County, Florida, where Naples, Florida is literally two-thirds Republicans, and Lee County is about 40% Democrat and 60% Republican, somewhere in that neighborhood. Our newspaper, the Fort Myers newspaper, which is no small newspaper, printed a letter to the editor just the other day. And this letter to the editor said that the answer to all of our problems is to deport all Muslims and tear down their mosque. Do I think that's an extreme position for Republicans? No, I don't. I've heard this many, many times. To just ship them all out of the country and, you know, tear down their churches, their mosque and all. We don't need this kind of stuff in our country. We are a Christian nation. We don't need those ragheads here. We don't need those camel jockeys here. What other dirty euphemism that you can come up with? We've heard it all, haven't we? But we actually have someone that signs their name to a letter to the editor and says we need to deport all the Muslims and tear down their mosque. That's what we're living with here, folks. That's what we're living with here in this country. And it's just a dirty shame. 866-546-5254. Oh, we already talked about Trent Lott. I don't want to talk about him anymore. We don't need to talk about Trent Lott anymore. I did want to talk about some words coming from John Dean, his latest book out called Broken Government, How Republican Rule Destroyed the Legislative, Executive, and Judicial Branches. People say that they'll never support this candidate or that candidate if he or she becomes the Democratic nominee. And you've heard that just like I've heard it. And I mentioned a prominent Democratic website, and it's not the only one. It's not the only one. I was attacked vehemently on that site after this program last Wednesday, I believe it was, for saying that this particular website, where I'd heard some despicable comments, and it's, you know, got a Democratic name, and you have people on there attacking the Democratic candidates, not in a normal primary politics mode. No, not at all. That's not what I'm talking about, and it's not what I'm talking about when I they said trash that website. I didn't trash it. I just brought up the fact that there's a lot of trashing of candidates going on, Democratic candidates, with this infighting we see in the Democratic Party, but it's beyond the pale. And I wanted to give you an example of, maybe I didn't, and maybe I forgot that I said it, but I wanted to give an example of what I saw on this particular website as to why I said what I did. I said what I did because I went on this website. It's the Democratic Underground, let's just put it that way. It's the most popular Democratic website that I know of, and I'm not trashing the website. I'm trashing the people on there who choose to use the lowest common denominator in their politics. Somebody on there posted a thread, and you know, as well as I do, there's a lot of resistance to Hillary Clinton getting to be the nominee of the Democratic Party. She is not my candidate. And as I've mentioned before, out of the seven that are left in the race, she is seventh on my list. That's not what this is about. But they start a thread on this website and put a picture, a huge picture, taken off of a right-wing Republican website someplace, I think from the Freepers, that showed Hillary Clinton dressed in a Nazi uniform. That's hardly what I would call normal primary politics. And oh, the thread got long, and they trashed me, the Guy James Show, and everything for saying this about him. I went on there and I said in a post that no real Democrat would do a thing like that, and I mean that. No real Democrat would post a candidate, a picture of any one of our candidates in a Nazi uniform. And all the criticism that followed, why, you can't say that somebody isn't a real Democrat for posting a picture of Hillary Clinton in a Nazi. Yes, I can. And I'd say it again and again. Doesn't make any difference if it's Chris Dodd, John Edwards, Kucinich, Hillary, Obama. Joe Biden, Bill Richardson. Doesn't make any difference which one of them that would happen. That is wrong. That is just wrong. Let's play politics. Let's do our primary politics. Let's point out the pluses and the minuses, the deficiencies of each of the candidates, and let's do it in rough and tumble form if we need to. Nothing wrong with that. We're all big boys and girls, and so are the candidates, and we can take it, okay? But please, putting a picture up and posting it and leaving it on a website, the administrators of the website leaving it up, a picture of Hillary Clinton in a Nazi uniform, that's way beyond the pale. That's the most offensive thing that I have seen in Democratic politics in my lifetime. And I don't want to see any more of it. And that's why I'm bringing this up. I don't have anything against that website. Hell, I've been a member of it for as long as they've been around. And they can trash me all I want to. But I want to make it very clear. I was not trashing that website. I was trashing the people who would do such a despicable thing. And I said that they're not Democrats, and they are not. So I've said my piece on that. Say what you want. Let's have an honest, open discussion about all of our candidates. But let's not resort to things like that. And that all started because I said I wouldn't allow the show to become something like that, and I won't. But getting back to what John Dean said, before you run off and say that you're, well, I'm not going to support Hillary, I'm not going to support Kucinich, I'm not going to support Joe Biden, I'm not going to. John Dean has a list of things that could undergo radical changes, if a Republican wins the presidency and puts in another hardcore fundamentalist justice on the Supreme Court. First of all, Roe v. Wade. will be in serious jeopardy. Affirmative action. The Bill of Rights. You want a state religion? You just put another one or two fundamentalist justices on the Supreme Court if you want to all be become whatever religion it is they want you to become. We'll all be, they'll make Pat Robertson the Pope, and we'll all be worshiping at his church. Civil rights laws. Cruel and unusual punishment. The EPA. Free speech. Gay rights. Guns. Habeas corpus. Religion. They'll crack down on anything that they call obscene, and you know they think almost everything sexually related is. And voting. They'll cut back on the one person, one vote concept and restrict the Voting Rights Act. So before you run off and say, I'm going to stick to my principles and I'm going to vote for a third-party candidate, or I'm going to write in, or just keep in mind what you might be opening us up to. Unless you think you're just one vote and all. I know that story. How'd you like to have Rudy Giuliani as your president? As someone said a little bit earlier today, he's Bush with a brain. Probably the most dangerous man that has ever run for the office of president in the United States. And I do mean that. He's a war hawk of the highest order. He loves the Bush War. Loves it. And wouldn't mind just starting another one with Iran right now. You wouldn't be able to get after Iran fast enough. I doubt he'd sit and watch the entire inauguration parade because he'd be inside pushing whatever buttons you have to start a war on Iran. I don't think there's any question Rudy Giuliani is one of the most dangerous men to ever run for the presidency of the United States. That's how I feel about it anyway. We're going to pause for a break. We'll be back.
Round up the usual suspects.
Hi, boys and girls. This is Rick Goodner, part of the Weekend Wrecking Crew. And I'm here to tell you that you cannot miss Billy Shears. The man knows his music. The man knows what you're thinking. Tune in and listen. You'll be surprised. He's going to play the very song that you were thinking that you needed to hear. He's a genius. Maybe a bit psychic. I promise you. Tune in on the weekend, listen to Billy Shears Night Sounds, and you will hear the song you've been waiting to hear. And you'll enjoy your time as much as I do. Right here, on the Horn, Head On Radio Network. Make sure you don't miss what you've been waiting to hear with Billy Shear.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
As time goes by.
Yes, indeed. We're all walking. Because walking is good medicine for your heart. The American Heart Association says for every hour of regular vigorous exercise we do, like very brisk walking, we could live 2 hours longer. So start walking. Imagine if we walk to the moon and back, we could live forever. Start walking for life. Take your mother. Take your brother. Take your heart for a walk. Join the START movement at AmericanHeart.org/START for tools, tips, and more. Everybody now, I'm walking. Yes, indeed, and I'm a-talking. You'll feel better, and you could live longer.
Little beats in me will die.
spirals to the ground. So cut it red, tomorrow's clouds. A little piece of you, a little piece in me.
Welcome back. Coming up on the bottom of the hour here at the Guy James Show in the second hour of the program. Thank you for joining us today. You're welcome to give us a call at 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Love to hear from you. From time to time, you run across some of these right-wingers whose ideas are so offensive. And you know when they're most offensive to me? They're most offensive to me when I know they're doing it as whores. And I mean that in the most disrespectful way to these people. Whores. Prostitutes. Political prostitutes. Selling themselves and their ideas for money. I think it's okay to give your ideas and be paid for that. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with being an honest commentator and putting out your views. As much as I don't like some of them, they have every right in the world to do that. And more power to them. It's the American way, like it or not, what they say. But along comes a couple of people on the right who are nothing more than political whores that would say anything they needed to say and do and have for a buck. I've heard them change their tunes over the years for money. And one of them that I'm speaking about in particular is Dennis Prager. Dennis Prager, has become a political whore of the highest order. He was never that big of a deal into politics. He was never that big of a deal into right-wing politics, so anti-left that he couldn't stand it. But he has found that that's where he can get his bread buttered, and that is exactly what Dennis Prager has been doing for the last several years. Now, I would never argue that Dennis Prager is a highly intelligent man. He is. He's a learned, scholarly man. I even met him one time in Washington. He seemed to be okay. A little bit full of himself. But he's just become the worst kind of radio whore. And he's got an article out right now called "The World Doesn't Hate America, The Left Does." That title, "The World Doesn't Hate America, The Left Does." And he's got that up on townhall.com right now. And, of course, on Town Hall, you've got Mike Gallagher, Hugh Hewitt, Michael Medved, Tony Blankley, Dennis Prager, some other right-wing whores in there. But I wanted to read you just a couple of excerpts out of this article, The World Doesn't Hate America, The Left Does, to give you an example of what a whore Dennis Prager has become. Said, one of the most widely held beliefs in the contemporary world, so widely held it is not disputed, is that with a few exceptions, the world hates America. One of the Democrats' major accusations against the Bush administration is that it has increased hatred of America to unprecedented levels. And in many polls, the United States is held to be among the greatest obstacles to world peace and harmony, so says Dennis Prager. But it is not true that the world hates America. It is the world's left that hates America. However, because the left dominates the world's news media, and because most people understandably, believe what the news media report, many people, including Americans, believe that the world hates America. Well, now let's look at that paragraph. He said it's not true that the world hates America. Every poll that I have seen from every major developed country in the past couple of years has shown a remarkable amount, and I don't want to use the word hatred. Yes, in some cases it is hatred. But many people have changed their opinion of this country. And it doesn't have a damn thing to do with any media being dominated by the left, because it simply is not true. I spoke to you on a recent show about how that's one of the biggest fallacies that's ever been invented on this earth. And somehow, these Republicans have convinced their great unwashed masses that the media really is controlled by the left, when nothing could be further from the truth. Nothing. I think it's because of the Hollywood thing that they've gotten away with this. Yes, a lot of people in Hollywood are on the left. Some of them far left. But as I've mentioned before, Fox, NBC, ABC, CBS, all of the big networks are owned by people who are on the right. In the old days, and I'm talking about not so long ago, maybe 3 decades ago, while it may have been true that many of the reporters and the newscasters were Democrats, liberal Democrats, that may have been true, but nowadays their jobs are on the line, and they can express some views, but they better not get carried away with it. The right owns the media. They own talk radio. They control talk radio. They've got like 85% of talk radio listeners. They absolutely control it with an iron fist. And they own the media. So Dennis, please, don't insult us by saying the left dominates the world's news media, because this simply is not true. And he goes on to say that it is the left and those influenced by the left-leaning news and entertainment media that hates America can be easily shown. Take Western Europe, says Prager, which is widely regarded as holding America in contempt. That is true. But upon examination, only validates my thesis. The French, for example, are regarded as particularly American-hating. But if this were so, how does one explain the election of Sarkozy as president of France? Well, Dennis, it says Sarkozy loves America and was known to love America when he ran for president. Maybe, Dennis, just maybe, people thought the guy was smart enough to run the country the way they want it run. Yes, he likes America. He likes the country for what it is. He doesn't like the Bush administration. He didn't say one way or another. But Sarkozy is not exactly He's not going to stand up and say he hates America. He does like America. It is well known. But the French are being intelligent people. They know how to distinguish this poppycock that Prager's putting forth here from the truth. But it says the left dominate the media, the arts, the universities, and unions that hate the U.S., not the French. And I'm so tired of them talking about the elite liberal universities in this country. What another cop-out. If the most learned people in the country that teach in the great universities of this country, and the great preponderance of them are liberal, are on the left, what does that tell you? If the majority of the learned people in this country are on the left, what does that tell you? It tells you that thinking people can think beyond what Dennis Prager or Rush Limbaugh say. And by the way, he's the other wild right-wing whore in the media. He would become a spokesman for the Democrats tomorrow if you just, you know, gave him enough money. And no doubt in my mind, you know, you've heard me say that many, many times. And he Prager goes on to talk about Spain, the Prime Minister of Spain from 1996 to 2004. He said he's a conservative who holds America in the highest regard. He was elected twice. And polls in Spain up to the week before the 2000 election all predicted a third term for Aznar's party. Only the Madrid subway bombings perpetrated by Muslim terrorists 3 days before the election, but which the Aznar government erroneously blamed on Basque separatists, turned the election against the Conservative Party. What has that got to do with America? Anyway, I just want to tell you, Dennis, in case it gets back to you, and I wish it would, that your article that stating that the world doesn't hate America, the left does, is just a pure, unadulterated bullshit. I don't know how else to put it, and a man of you know, a brain the size of yours would understand it, but it's plain bullshit, as is almost everything that's on Town Hall nowadays. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. I know you've all seen these two polls talking about who could win and who couldn't for the Democrats and the Republican. We got two different polling firms. You got Zogby and Gallup released their polls with huge differences in their conclusion. The Zogby poll, as you know by now, says that Hillary can't beat any of the GOP leading candidates. And the Gallup poll says Hillary and even Obama has a slight to sizable lead over the Republicans. So who do we believe? Well, I think one of the best ways, and you've heard me talk about this before, Zogby is one that's very unreliable because they've done an internet poll here. And internet polls are not at all reliable. They have not shown to be reliable whatsoever. Telephone poll is, or an in-person poll, are far more reliable than an internet poll. So here we have one poll, and you know, both sides are using this. We got one poll saying, "Well, Hillary can't win. We might as well go move on to Obama or somebody else because Hillary can't win." And we've got the other side saying Hillary and Obama are the only two that can beat the Republicans, so forget the other guys. You know, it's politics as usual. But Gallup and Zogby both, you know, Zogby's, I'm surprised that he's turned to this internet thing for a poll. It's a little bit surprising to me. I was going to get started today talking about politics and the politicians and what it's like to be in that arena. And, you know, I'll admit that I know it's sometimes extremely difficult to be a politician. Their lives aren't all wine and roses. It's not. We sit out here and throw stones and say, oh, God, they've got it made. They've got the greatest insurance in the world. And they sit on their ass all day, and they've got public adulation, and they got people working for them that think they're kings and queens and all that. And we do say all that, and all of that is true. But they have their problems as well. It's easy for you and I to sit out here in the hinterlands and demand black and white answers to the problems facing all of our elected representatives. I've done it. You've done it. Everybody's done it. The problem is that all the problems can't be answered with a simple yes or no. Sometimes it's just not that easy. And I think we went through that pretty, not too long ago. Put yourself in their places. Let's take, for example, the big flap over Hillary Clinton's answer concerning the driver's license in New York for illegals. How would you answer that question, knowing that most likely the best solution is smack dab in the middle of a huge gray area someplace? And you've got a moderator standing there asking you pretty much for a yes or no answer. I think it's a very complex problem, which requires an extremely detailed, maybe even a torturously nuanced answer, and that doesn't satisfy anybody. But sometimes some of these questions just need a big, long, nuanced answer. And face it, whether you love Hillary or whether you hate her, the answer to that question can't be easily answered. And I don't know an absolute definitive answer to that driver's license. I mean, do you? I doubt you can come up with a solution that's going to be a perfect fit for everyone, and seems that's what we're demanding of the candidates on that issue. And sometimes politicians have to throw out a few possible solutions and hope that one of them becomes a perfect or maybe even a near-perfect fit as you can get. And I think she knew exactly where Elliot Spitzer was coming from and was trying to work with him on the best path to take the most, take on that really difficult issue. And it is a difficult issue. When asked the question during the most recent debate, the second one now, her no answer was probably the best thing to do. Whether we liked it or not, for her, it was the best thing to do. And she knew she was going to be attacked no matter which route. That was one of those heads you lose, tails you lose questions. And so she just kept it short and simple. And I would have, too, under those circumstances. I don't think there's anything you could say to get yourself out of a debate on that particular answer that's going to satisfy the masses. Let's be fair here. I don't think so. And I think that's one of the most glaring differences between the left and the right show up. The left is usually satisfied to explore the gray area and to work out a solution that's a decent fit for everybody. We think about it. See, that's the thing. We think about it. We dive into it. We look at the whole ball of wax and we think about it. The right, however, has to have some sort of a black or white answer to every problem. War on terror? Kill the Muslims. Problem with Iran? Bomb them. Forget any messy, lengthy negotiation. Just bomb the hell out of them. The UN? Have a guy like John Bolton tell everyone it's our way or the highway. Why bother sitting around and talking when you can simply call the Pentagon and solve your problem with a few missiles and a few dead American soldiers? That's the way the right thinks. Let's not get in this problem and pick it apart and really think it through. No, let's just come up with a black or white answer. There is nothing else we could... the immigration problem. Their answer is to build an impenetrable wall that'll keep all of them out. That ought to do it. Nice, clean solution to a messy, messy problem. Forget that massive poverty exists on the other side of that fence. Forget addressing that. Just build a wall. Or just put enough troops on the border to kill every last one of them as their, wives and children step over the line. That's the easy way to do it. That's what Tom Tancredo and his disciples would have you do. And it's the same no matter where you go across the spectrum of political problems. Environmental problems, just pretend they don't exist. Put your head in the sand. There is no global warming. Global warming, don't discuss it. Deride the notion that there even is such a thing. Act like it's some sort of an extremist liberal invention. For what reason, I don't know, that we would invent something like that. To what end did Al Gore come up with this, what they say is hogwash, for his personal benefit? In the American economy, it goes all the way through. Hell, it's fine, they say. All their top economists say so. Charles Krauthammer and Fox's Neil Cavuto said everything's okay. Then it is. There's no need to listen to the working men carping and complaining about it. The right has to have a yes or no, black or white answer to everything. That's how they think, because they either aren't capable of doing independent thought that you actually need to actually work out a real cogent opinion, or they just find it easier to have only two choices where there might actually be a dozen possible answers to a really difficult question. I think it's some of each, actually. And hence we have the proliferation of right-wing pundits and radio. It must be so easy writing an article for the Washington Times or the American Spectator. All one would have to do is pick a subject and say you were for it or against it and let the bile flow. You don't have to explain why you like or dislike a certain position. You don't have to do any explaining. Just be inflexible. Come up with a few clever, easy-to-remember sound bites, and your audience will, you know, they'll call you up and say, Megadiddos, Rush, and agree with everything you have to say. You got your O'Reilly and your Laura Ingraham and Limbaugh and Hannity and Neil Bortz, and the rest don't have to make sense. All they got to do is make life simple for their listeners. Lower taxes, smaller government, kill the Muslims, bomb Iran, fight them over there so we don't have to fight them here. Just make it easy for all the people on the right to understand so they don't have to think. It's why they are so very easily manipulated into voting against their own interests. No wonder when they control the government, they can't get anything meaningfully done. Meaningful. They can't. Because they don't have a clue as to how to do anything. All they know is to be against everything. They don't know what to do when they actually have to govern. It's called reality. They ought to learn to deal with it. But I've seen no evidence that they ever have learned to deal with it. Well, we're going to pause for a quick break and we'll be right back.
Survive when these little minds tear you in two.
Oh, here we are, counting down toward the top of the hour here on the Guy James Show today. Thank you to everybody for being with us. Appreciate all your comments during the program on the chat room and in the email. Thank you. Good to hear from you. We've had a whole lot of talk going on about losing our freedoms here in this country, and they are gradually being eroded. I don't think there's any question about that. We've all noticed it. We've seen the cameras at the stoplights and many other egregious violations of our freedoms taking place ever so subtly and not so subtly sometimes. And we so often hear the word freedom tossed around nowadays, and it's really easy to get caught up in the whole illegal NSA spying scandal, but that sort of thing. But what does freedom really mean? Does it mean that you have the ability to do whatever you wish? Does it mean something very personal to you? Or does it have to do with a whole nation of people being able to do as they please when they please? This NSA problem and the governmental spying has brought things to light that, you know, that people are spying on us. They're listening to our phone calls. They're monitoring our email and who knows what else. And it's you go to a public place, you feel like you're being watched anymore, and it's an outrageous theft of our privacy. It's personal to most of us. And isn't that what freedom means? That's sure what it means to me. It's something very, very personal. And while I've watched the everyday events of these past few years, I've discovered that freedom isn't something that you take, or for that matter, that you can give. Most times, your freedom is in the hands of others. And to me, that doesn't mean real freedom. Hope I'm making sense here. As long as whether or not you are free is a decision made by other human beings, you're never really free, are you? I don't think so. Genuine freedom comes not from external circumstances, but from within us, from our inner strength, and from our own inner choices. And I've been reading a book by a concentration camp survivor. It's called Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. And I wrote down this phrase he said. He said, you know, we who lived in concentration camps can remember the men who walked through the huts comforting others, giving away their last piece of bread. They may have been few in number, but they offer sufficient proof that everything can be taken away from a man but one thing. The last of the human freedoms to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances to choose one's own way. And I don't think I'll ever read anything ever again that had such a profound meaning to me as that. That the argument between the left and the right today is about how to secure freedom, not what freedom is. Until you understand what the real meaning of freedom is, then how can you join the debate? Am I rambling here? Some act as though freedom will guarantee us happiness forever, you know, save us from the trials and tribulations of life. And I don't think that's the case. We are free people. And yet there are those among us who are being persecuted by our government. And we were never promised that as a free people we'd be able to avoid the death and the destruction that comes with a war. We were never promised we wouldn't be reviled or hated for our political beliefs. That kind of freedom is dependent upon others. And that's not what I'm talking about here. That is why freedom is so much dearer to those of us who will continue to fight against those who would try and deny it to us, like they're trying right now. That is why we're more free than any of them will ever be, because the threats they impose upon us don't keep us from still seeking and keeping our freedom in our hearts and minds. You know, they threaten us with terror and they tell us they hate us because we're free. And that's utter nonsense. They only say that to make us believe that we need to trust the government to keep us free. Your real freedom is up to you, and it's up to you alone. And the excuse our government gives us for wanting to take away some of our privacy is that 9/11 changed everything. 9/11 changed nothing. Our response to 9/11 changed lots of things, but the event itself changed nothing. We didn't discover all of a sudden on 9/11 that there were enemies of this nation. That wasn't news to anyone, or shouldn't have been. The Bush administration would have us believe That was the day the Muslim world turned on us. That's the day the war on terror started. Again, it's just simply not true. Why did everybody forget April of 1995? Why was that different? Because white guys did it? That's the difference, isn't it? White guys killed a bunch of Americans, but when some brown people did it, that is when our government sprang into action with this so-called war on terror. The hatred and the bigotry that has resulted from 9/11 is something we should all be ashamed of, because we can no more hold all of the Muslim or Arab people responsible for 9/11 than we can hold all the white people responsible for the Murrow Building in Oklahoma City. The fact of the matter is, there has always been and always will be people that hate us, people that want to see us die, people that want to blow us off the face of the earth for being rich or arrogant or powerful or white or black or Muslim or Christian. Take your pick. There's plenty of reasons. So if your definition of freedom comes from having people who hate us defeated or imprisoned or to give democracy to other countries like Iraq, for example, then you're never going to be free enough. You'll never be free because your freedom is based on other human beings. Your freedom has to be based on yourself and your own inner choices. I choose to be free. Therefore, I am now and I will always be free. I hope that this gives you something to think about. Freedom is precious to me, but I don't depend upon others for it. I alone am responsible for my freedom now and forevermore, and I believe that. So, Junior Bush, Dick Cheney, Mitch McConnell, Rudy Giuliani, Mitt Romney, Condi, the whole gang of you, listen up. You may be able to invade my privacy, but you will never ever take away my freedom. It just isn't possible. Being free is something very, very special. And I'm afraid in a lot of ways we've allowed these people to think they're, you know, we've allowed ourselves, we've let ourselves think that they're taking away our freedom. But they're not going to. That is up to you. And I know you'll fight for it, and I'll fight for it, we'll all fight for it, we'll be free. This country is too good and too decent, despite all the warts and problems that we have, for it to be any other way. I'm still proud to be an American, and I shall remain that way until the day I die. She's not perfect, she never was, and she never will be. But it demands the efforts of all of us to keep us free and keep us being a decent nation. And in a lot of ways right now, taking it back to the decent nation we used to be. Well, thanks for listening today. Thanks to Billy Shears, music director. We're members of the very, very fine Head On Radio Network. And don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you tomorrow, gang.